Now, the slam poetry movement of the 1980s came out of Chicago, and this is where spoken word performer Miles Merrill comes from too. Miles frequented the Sydney spoken word circuit for a number of years, also performing for children in schools, and then in 2007 he set up Australia's very own National Poetry Slam. For our off-the-shelf spot, Miles Merrill talks about his favourite books, the works that have influenced his own writing, and his forays into literary capitalism.
The writing that influenced me as a writer and performer was actually spoken word, done by an actor named Eric Bogosian. In the United States, he performed a series of monologues under the name Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. And there were about 10 monologues where he just took on different voices, different characters, and he wrote all these pieces for himself and performed them. And I picked up a recording and went, wow, this is amazing, Eric Bogosian. So, yeah, very big influence. Also, Whoopi Goldberg, seeing her stand-up shows as well. She really knows how to turn comedy into sadness and really get you almost crying, but not quite there, and then you laugh. I fell in love with Philip K. Dick and went through and read almost everything that he'd written except for the sort of later years. But Philip K. Dick wrote The Man in the High Castle, A Scanner Darkly. He wrote Blade Runner, and Blade Runner is one of my favorite films. He wrote Blade Runner as Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And what's amazing about Philip K. Dick is he has this wonderful knack for questioning what a human is and who has rights and who doesn't have rights. And it leads me to the idea that if we started to clone people in order to do work for us, how would we make sure that they had the same rights as other human beings? So I'm quite fascinated by his work. The book that stood out for me early on as a child was a book by Judy Blume called Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing. And I lorded that book over my sister's head and told her that she couldn't read it until she was in fourth grade. But it was one of these things that made me realize that being a weirdo and being strange in school wasn't really that bad, and that I could kind of make a niche for myself by playing up the weirdo-ness. I have reread Moby Dick by Herman Melville just twice, you know, just once and then read it again. I just love the humor in it, and I wanted to follow the story in Moby Dick, but then I would get to the descriptions of the whales, and eventually I just started skipping the descriptions of the whales. So I felt like I had to really go back and immerse myself once again in those vivid descriptions, because it's a world that we don't have access to anymore. The abridged editions of Moby Dick would be absolutely nightmarish and horrible. I was a book collector for years. That was my job. I worked for different bookstores, and when I was in the United States, I decided to just take a road trip, and along the way, I would go to junk shops in all the small towns, and eventually, when I got to a big city, I would sell the first edition Franz Kafka or the first proofread edition of Carl Jung that I'd found somewhere in a St. Vincent's for 10 cents. And the biggest one was actually a first edition of The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, signed by Arthur Conan Doyle. I bought it for about 20 cents in a St. Vincent de Paul, resold it at auction for about $1,700, so not bad. From early on, I was a collector of comic books. This was before I understood the value of first editions in literature. So I had a massive comic book collection. My favorite was X-Men and Thor. But I only really collected them not just because of the stories, but often for the artwork. And often just because they happened to be valuable. So it was more about books being financial, almost like financial trading. trading in stocks, but they happened to be comic books. And unfortunately, my sister sold my comic book collection for about $600 to buy her boyfriend a pair of Nikes and a jumper. And then he broke up with her two months later, and that was my comic book collection gone. My father is a singer, and so he gets up and entertains in nightclubs in Wichita Falls, Texas. And he does,
Lady, I'm your knight in shining armor, and I love you.
And I always thought, I don't want to be like my father. But here I am, an entertainer. But I try as much as possible to use literature or, good writing to present to an audience, because I think people should respect you for your ideas before they respect you for anything else.
Spoken word performer Miles Merrill there with his off-the-shelf selection. Miles is the founder of the Australian National Poetry Slam competition, and heats for the competition are on until November. His latest spoken word foray is into hip-hop. His spoof album of the genre is called Dirty Curly. So that's the end of the book show for today, but on tomorrow's program, Bob Stein, founder and director of the Institute for the Future of the Book, he'll be on, and we'll ask just what is the future of the book. We think beyond current technologies like the various e-readers on the market, because Bob Stein doesn't think those digital gadgets will be around in 50 years. He wants to be able to make notes in the margins of e-books and share the notes with other readers in a network community. And his institute has been experimenting with ways to make this happen. We'll find out all about that tomorrow. You can hear today's program again tonight at 8 p.m. or if you're listening in the evening, you can hear it again by going to the website abc.net.au/rn/bookshow. That's where you can arrange the podcasting and find today's guest and book details. Ramona Koval here on ABC Radio National, shortly First Person.